This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means?
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Your fill and dig in.
That was Nelly Mackay with a song called Food from her 2006 record, Pretty Little Head. And welcome your pretty little head here to the first B-side of 2010 from MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. It's a little bit past 8:30 on this February 5th morning, 2010, and there's so much to go over, I had to make a new episode. So if you're keeping score, this is the B-side of 155 from Media Monarchy, and what we're going to do is mostly go over my two sub-sites, cyberspacewar.com and foodworldorder.com. We're going to hit up Food World Order first, apropos of our intro. So first up, by way of therealfoodchannel.com, Dennis Kucinich, Vegan Brownies and Food Spirituality. Representative Dennis Kucinich, Democrat from Ohio and the man the Democrats should have nominated, recently sat down with Reddit.com to answer 10 questions from website visitors. The full video is 28 minutes long, and they go over gun control, health care, voter reform, special interest groups, and more. However, finally, The congressman answered a question that we've all pondered of our political officials. Quote, if you were made the absolute dictator of the U.S. for one day, what are some of the things you would do? And thankfully, his answer has to do with food.
I have a note here from Rice Cracker. That's how it's spelled here. If you were made the absolute dictator of the U.S. for one day, what are some of the things you would do? I would order everyone to have vegan chocolate chip brownies. Now, why would I do that? Well, I've been a vegan now for, since 1995. That would be more than 14 years. And as a result, I've had tremendous health. I have had great energy, clarity. I've had the ability to be able to connect my dietary choices with my health. I had Crohn's growing up and had a pretty serious bout with it throughout my 30s and 40s. When I changed my diet, the symptoms began to disappear. And I started to understand also how the choice of diet affects the environment, resources, energy. It's a spiritual choice as well. And so if I had one day to make an imprint on the nation, I'd look at the choices that we make with respect to food. Also the matters of compassion towards living creatures who become food. We need to be more thoughtful as a nation about the choices that we make and the food that we consume. Now, I'm not someone who believes that you can truly dictate to people what food they should eat. But I thought it was a great opportunity to bring in the potential of diet for transforming individual health and for transforming the nation in some powerful and positive ways. So thank you for the appropriately Rice Cracker, appropriately named Rice Crackers too. The next question.
Well, I would have to say that sums up the mission statement behind foodworldorder.com pretty well. Couldn't have said it better myself, Kucinich. Now, however, I'm not vegan, but I also think that starting Food World Order not quite a year ago, almost been doing the site for a year, but I think it's part of my own education about what we take in. So now we're going to move to our next post by way of NBCNewYork.com. New York's hungry kids, 1 in 5 rely on emergency food. 1 in 8 Americans needed emergency food help in 2009, and 1 in 5 children in New York City are relying on emergency food. These sad statistics come from FeedingAmerica.org and the Food Bank for New York City, FoodBankNYC.org. Food insecure is the bureaucratic term for hungry people, and New York is unfortunately a textbook case in food insecurity. Food pantries, soup kitchens overloaded, yet without a healthy infusion of federal stimulus money, it could be a lot worse. So says Joel Berg, executive director of the NYC Coalition Against Hunger, nyccah.org. Berg says 37% of South Bronx residents have trouble affording food. Federal stimulus money is helping us avert disaster. We're fortunate to have that money at this time. And again, it's our money in the first place. Berg goes on, however, jumping down. The figures overall are stunning, and it seems incredible that in the richest city in America, they haven't even come close to solving the problem. The small people deserve better. Will they live to see a better world? The plight of the hungry should be high on the agendas of the mayor, the governor, and all our elected officials in the year ahead. We must do better. Now, granted, this is a Manhattan-centric article, again, by way of NBCNewYork.com, but you can go, and I've linked it all up, and again, that's one of the things I try and do for you with the websites, is do a little extra legwork and give you the downloads to the documents, the research papers, And you can get Feeding America's Hunger Study 2010. It's a 10 megabyte PDF put up there for you. So again, I'm not trying to tell you what to think. I'm just trying to do the data mining, do the research, hand you some tools and some keys and some maps, and hopefully you can go explore on your own. So continuing on foodworldorder.com, this time by way of the New York Times, different story, similar rundown. Survey says U.S. households struggle to afford food. Nearly one in five Americans, oh, that other one said one in eight. Nearly one in five Americans said they lacked the money to buy food at some point in the last year, according to a survey co-sponsored by Gallup and released by an anti-hunger group. The numbers soared at the start of the current recession, but dipped in 2009 despite the continuing rise in unemployment. The anti-hunger group, the Food Research and Action Center, FRAC.org, FRAC.org, attributed that trend to falling food prices, rising enrollment for food stamps, and an increase in the amount of food stamp benefit. More than 38 million Americans, one in eight, now receive food stamps, a record high. So in addition to the supplemental contextual links to do more research for yourself, we've got reports from Reuters and Alternet, and more press releases from the Food Research and Action Center, Dispatch.com, Philly.com, and we have the paper, Food Hardship, A Closer Look at Hunger. It's a small little PDF, but again, handing you the info, collecting it all up. You know that the folks working against us are gobbling up every bit of information. Shouldn't you probably be doing the same thing? The last post on Food World Order that we're going to hit, more food safety news, beef, babies, nuts, and budgets. And again, like the binge and purge we hit from last week about food safety news, getting tons of news from them and even kind of relying on them as a crutch to fill in a lot of the Food World Order headlines. FoodSafetyNews.com does good, succinct work. So most of these go to FoodSafetyNews.com. And the first one's with a caveat. Should we care about genetically modified foods? I think you know the answer to that. However, the writer of this maybe isn't so sure. And the commenters, they smell it. We do have one from FarmWars.info, the seed monopolies and how the warning signs were there. Failure to declare leads to recalls. West Missouri beef recalls 14,000 pounds. We have more melamine-tainted milk found in China. If you'll recall a recent post back in January, also with a video up on youtube.com/MediaMonarchy. Baby formula recalled in the Middle East. USDA releases study on peanut industry. And again, that PDF is there for you. Washington State to ban BPA. That's bisphenol A. In all food containers for kids. And lastly, and another PDF document for you to download. Again, think tanks, white papers. They write it down. They put it out. But like Alan Dulles said, the American public doesn't read. So you should prove that old CIA bastard wrong and read. And it's a bit of good news. Obama boosts FDA food safety in the fiscal year 2011 budget. Or at least that's ostensibly a good thing. Although the way we see it with the financial terror scams and the false flag terror scams is that they like to let it or make it blow up on purpose and then demand more money and more control. So that's all the latest from foodworldorder.com. And again, I implore you to check out the other sites more. Try and integrate them well. And again, you probably, much like me, in your life, in your personal life, the folks that you're around, friends, families, coworkers, you know they all have some kind of area of interest when you're trying to talk about truth news. So you tailor your message to those folks. And there's no shortage of ridiculous news happening on every single level. And food is a huge one, if not the biggest. And while I'm digressing, ultimately, this is all of this is a war on consciousness. So remember that. We're now going to hop over to my other sub-site, cyberspacewar.com, for a whole raft of terrible news for internet freedoms. Again, not much of this should be a surprise. The good spook giveth the internet, and they can probably take it away or limit it extremely. For example, House overwhelmingly passes cybersecurity bill. This by way of Kurt Nimmo. And of course, following the Halloween-esque scare fest on Capitol Hill earlier this week, which we'll get to in the upcoming episode 156 of Media Monarchy, where National Intelligence Director Dennis Blair and CIA Director Leon Panetta warned of impending terrorist doom. So in light of all that, the threat-aganda, the House has passed the Cybersecurity Enhancement Act, H.R. 4061. Links for you to opencongress.org, science.house.gov. The House today overwhelmingly passed a bill aimed at building up the United States' cybersecurity, army, and expertise amid growing alarm over the country's vulnerability online, reports the New York Times. The bill, which passed 422-5, gee, I wonder who those five are. I haven't even checked it out, but I'm sure off the top of my head it's probably Ron Paul, Alan Grayson, Marcy Kaptur, Kucinich, and maybe Maxine Waters. So somebody double-check me and see how I did on my guess. The bill, which passed 422-5, requires the Obama administration to conduct an agency-by-agency assessment of cybersecurity workforce skills and establishes a scholarship program for undergrad and grad students who agree to work as cybersecurity specialists for the government after graduation. As we've told you before, in the new financial world order, the only jobs left will be a snitch for Big Brother. Continuing, the new law will create a mega agency to, quote, represent the government in negotiations over international standards and orders the White House Office of Technology to convene a cybersecurity university industry task force to guide the direction of future research. This, according to Slashdot. Michael R. Curie, a New York Democrat who sponsored the bill, called cybersecurity the Manhattan Project of our generation and estimated the U.S. needs 500 to 1,000 more cyber warriors every year in order to keep up with potential enemies that we poke and prod into proactively attacking us. P2OG. But again, this all falls in line with everything we've been hearing from, whether it's Jay Rockefeller lamenting the invention of the internet, shame of West Virginia he is, all of it. It all ties in. The Information Operations Roadmap, the military, writing down, again, you have to read it though, that they're going to quote-unquote fight the net as if it were an enemy weapon system. So again, tons of other links in there for you. Federalnewsradio.com, USA Today, the Manhattan Project of our generation. Now, as if that wasn't bad enough, and this is the kind of shit that really makes me know that I have to get Media Monarchy off of Blogger and Google and host it myself. I just haven't been ready to take on something like that. Be evil. Google to enlist NSA to help it ward off cyber attacks. Or, again, as put by Steve Watson, Google reestablishes its relationship with government spies. It should be no surprise to you that all the major web companies, Google and Facebook and all that, probably have pretty close connections to the quote-unquote intelligence agencies. Startup capital coming from the CIA and some of its cutout front company business financial arms. But again, anyway, coming from Danger Room, Google to enlist NSA to help it ward off cyber attacks. The company, once known for its "don't be evil" motto, is now in bed with the spy agency known for the mass surveillance of American citizens. The National Security Agency, hello fellas, is widely understood to have the government's biggest and smartest collection of geeks, the guys that are more skilled at network warfare than just about anyone on the planet. So in a sense, it's only natural that Google would turn to the NSA after the company was hit by an ultra-sophisticated hack attack, which of course we previously covered on cyberspacewar.com. After all, the military's basically done the same thing, putting the NSA in charge of its new cyber command. Department of Homeland Stupidity is leaning heavily on the NSA to secure all those .gov networks. But there's a problem. The NSA and its predecessors also have a very, very long history of spying on huge numbers of people, both at home and abroad. During the Cold War, the agency worked with companies like Western Union to intercept and read millions of telegrams. Project Shamrock. Fact. During the War on Terror years, the NSA teamed up with the telecom companies to eavesdrop on customers' phone calls and internet traffic right from the telecom switching stations. Forget the room number, but of course it's Mark Klein, the whistleblower from inside AT&T, that said, no, the NSA is in there. They have a room. Everything goes through that room and then comes back out. Even after the agency pledged to clean up its act and was given wide new latitude to spy on whomever they like, the NSA was still caught over-collecting on U.S. citizens. And if you'll recall, with the link flashback to New York Times, the NSA even tried to wiretap a member of Congress without a warrant, and I believe that would be Democratic Congresswoman Jane Harman. You know, I mean, hey, I can't really blame the NSA for wanting to wiretap Harman, especially when she's talking to Israeli spies about trying to get lighter sentences for Rosen and Weissman. Other, you know, all the other AIPAC Israeli spies. Lawrence Franklin, all that. Oh, Jesus. Let's keep moving on cyberspace war. I don't want to think about Google anymore, but I'm sure it'll pop up. It's omnipresent. So the next post on cyberspace war is a news purge list. DEFCON 2-4, February 4th, cyberspace police state. These are all really ugly. Army sponsors university program to catch terrorists on Facebook and Twitter. That's from IDSnews.com. CIA and PayPal under bizarre SSL assault. This is coming from theregister.co.uk. CIA, PayPal, and hundreds of other organizations are under an unexplained assault that's bombarding their websites with millions of compute-intensive requests. The massive flood of requests is made over the website's SSL, or Secure Sockets Layer, port, causing them to consume more resources than normal connections. This all coming from researchers at Shadow Server Foundation. U.S. military responsibilities in cyberspace and beyond to expand. That article comes originally from Financial Times, kind of a mouthpiece for the elites. But their articles are tough to keep a permalink on. They're always bobbing and weaving and pulling them and putting them in the archives. So, thanks to globalresearch.ca, you have the full article, U.S. Military Responsibilities to Expand. Obama surrendering internet to foreign powers. That's from Newsmax. And an interesting one, I believe this came to me by way of Cryptogon, but a new research project from EFF, Electronic Frontier Foundation, EFF.org, is called Panopticlick, which is, of course, a play on the Panopticon, which I believe was Bentham's idea of a prison where no one was really ever sure if they're being watched, so you just assume you're always being watched. Sound familiar? Panopticlick, how unique and trackable is your browser? It's a nice, quick little thing. You hop on there, click test me. It's by way of panopticlick.eff.org. I ran the test once. Let's hit it again, see what happens. Please wait. Ah, within our data set of several hundred thousand visitors, only one in 289,241 browsers have the same fingerprint as yours. Now, I believe the first time I ran the search, and again, that was at home, so that was on a different web connection, it said, your browser is very secure. So that's interesting, so that's definitely worth checking out. You know, if you go onto the sites where you can just kind of test your speed, this one will test your privacy. Panopticlick. Computers that understand how you feel. Transhumanism coming soon. WikiLeaks.org temporarily, hopefully, shuts down. Unable to plug funding gap that ties into PayPal suspending their account. Now, could that be connected to PayPal being under a hack attack? Police went backdoor to web users' private data. That's from CNET News, CNET.com. And here we go. Time Magazine pushes draconian internet licensing plan. Time Magazine enthusiastically jumps on the bandwagon to back Microsoft executive Craig Mundy's call for internet licensing as authorities push for a system even more stifling than in China, where only people with government permission would be allowed to express free speech. The flashback is there. Going over the Davos Economic Forum. You'll remember we covered that last week because the head of security was discovered dead of suicide in his hotel room the day before. So this article from Paul Joseph Watson, Time Magazine pushes draconian internet licensing program. We also, I believe, just give the straight link. No, we don't. Screw Skull and Bones, Time Magazine. UN agency calls for global cyber warfare treaty, a driver's license for the web. Raw Story is covering this as well. Because the interesting thing about this, and there's also a rebuttal from another writer on InfoWars, so the driver's license for the internet meme, Time Magazine and the New York Times put out pretty much identical articles at the same time, both saying, hey, yeah, we need licenses for the internet. I don't have it linked up yet. It'll probably go up on cyberspacewar.com, but James Corbett of CorbettReport.com just wrote a new article about the rise and the drumbeat of new internet censorship. And again, you can see the elites. They'll all have the same message all at the same time. And this ties in with something we've referenced before, but here's more from ArsTechnica.com. Italy preparing to hold YouTube and others liable for uploads. And the last note from the Register, researchers penetrate last bastion of Windows security. The final post we're going to hit on cyberspace war, White House killing NASA's moon mission, from Computer World, with tons of other links to NASAWatch.com, Orlando Sentinel, KMTV.com, more from Computer World, updates from the Los Angeles Times and Raw Story. Reports surfacing this week say that the White House plans to put a stop to NASA's plans to return to the moon. The Orlando Sentinel, quoting an unnamed White House source, reported that Obama is looking to push the space agency in a new direction. Ooh. David Steitz, spokesperson at NASA headquarters in D.C., said he wouldn't comment on such reports until the White House budget proposal is announced. The plan was expected to be released on Monday. It was, and Constellation is dead. NASA has been looking to not only return astronauts to the moon, but also to build a lunar outpost there by 2020. The NASA plan included first sending next-gen robots and machines to the moon to create a landing area for spacecraft and a base where humans can live. Elite humans. NASA scientists have been preparing what the agency calls the Constellation Moon Landing Plan, which was set forth by former puppet President George W. Bush. So again, a couple of updates. Proposed NASA budget plots entrepreneur-friendly course, space tourism, and Obama aide says plans for new moon mission are dead. Cyberspacewar.com was started just for all these reasons that we just went over. The new techno president with the meme of a hacked presidency, all his websites, Twitter feeds, and Blackberries, press conferences, state dinners, hacked and crashed, space war, the strange occult NASA display during the inaugural parade, all the space memes. And it's been a long time since we've discussed Project Bluebeam on Media Monarchy, but there's so much swirling around with the spiral over Norway and CERN and the strange weather patterns and the things in space. Pluto changing colors, noticed today. Cyberspace war indeed. Now, the last few things we're going to go over here on this B-Side 155 from MediaMonarchy.com. We're going to cover some of the alternative news very quickly. Good news, a new documentary from Kevin Booth, the director of American Drug War, The Last White Hope. Hopefully you've seen that documentary. Kevin Booth is from the Austin, Texas, Sacred Cow production scene that spawned the likes of Alex Jones and Bill Hicks and Joe Rogan, connected to Richard Linklater. How Weed Won the West. New documentary exposes the drug war. In the follow-up to the groundbreaking documentary American Drug War, filmmaker Kevin Booth traces the fight against federal drug regulation in the state of California. A public majority has spoken and said yes to states' rights, allowing for the use of medicinal marijuana and opening up a new front in controversial medicinal dispensaries. While users herald the freedom of legally licensed weed, powerful forces at the DEA and law enforcement haven't given up their federal enforcement power yet. How Weed Won the West.
It was the summer of 2009. People were losing their jobs, and the value of our homes were dwindling before our very eyes. In California, state workers were being given IOUs in lieu of paychecks, and yet through all the hellishness, one fledgling industry was not only surviving, it was booming.
A lot of people think it's strange that marijuana, which has had this shadow over it for so long, is now being sold in storefronts in California.
What's happened is, as many people in the culture have used marijuana, they found out that Reefer Madness and other such propaganda films were just that, propaganda.
Cannabis, even very potent cannabis, is a remarkably safe medicine. We don't hear the horror stories with medical cannabis that we do with prescription drugs.
More patients are going to realize that they have a viable medication, and the rest of the states are going to slowly turn this way.
Even though California and other states have legalized marijuana, we've seen a massive increase in smash and grab raids.
Now, there is continued outrage tonight following a DEA raid on a medicinal marijuana clinic.
Several law enforcement agencies raided the dispensaries in Culver City and West Los Angeles.
There used to be a dispensary called Organica here, and if you can tell me, the place is just really only a shell right now.
Sorry, guys, we're closed right now.
We know this is all about you making something that's naturally occurring illegal so you can create artificial scarcity and jack up the prices.
Obama doesn't have that much power as we're seeing now.
I inhale frequently.
The drug dealing banks own and control many of the private prisons that hapless drug users are incarcerated in.
There's an inflection point that when we get over 3.2% of the population incarcerated, it actually increases crime.
This is risky, but I don't see any other strategy. I'm going to go down for it, though. I'm sick of what they're doing to people. This is wrong.
But the big kahuna is international control. Codex Alimentarius is a global compact being agreed to by the United Nations, the Fortune 500, and governments on a planetary scale. They want to criminalize over-the-counter sale of vitamin C, fish oil, colloidal silver, aloe vera. They want to make these controlled substances. That's why they're fighting to keep marijuana illegal.
Prohibition drives the price up on everything.
How weed won the West, you may have heard. Prohibition drives up the price of everything. That was, I believe, Freeway Ricky Ross, the man who was basically slinging drugs in L.A. However, he didn't know that he was getting his drugs from the Cocaine Importation Agency. That's right, the CIA, as pretty well documented by folks like not only Mike Rupert, ex-LAPD, but the late, great Gary Webb in his series in the San Jose Mercury News, and then later expanded into the book, Dark Alliance. So please support and purchase the hard copy DVD, and then you can make high quality copies for yourself. How Weed Won the West. Grow More Hemp. We do have a couple of related bits below this. One, again, from Kurt Nimmo. Legalization is a crucial issue for the liberty movement. A casual glance at the so-called war on drugs reminds one of Einstein's famous quip, insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting different results. Arresting and throwing recreational drug users in prison, primarily for possessing and smoking marijuana, will not win the supposed drug war. It simply creates a class of criminals where none existed before. Now the more bad news, I suppose. We've been cheering that it looks like they're waving the white flag in the failed war on drugs. But it still is in its death throes. This from Raw Story. Obama grows the drug war with enforcement a clear priority. It wasn't long ago when Obama's new drug czar, former Seattle Police Chief Gil Kerlikowske, swept into D.C. and declared the drug war a public policy relic. The Obama administration, he said, would move toward handling drug addiction as a medical problem, moving away from the brash enforcement of tactics that hallmarked prior administrations. We're not at war with people in this country, Kerlikowske told the Wall Street Journal in May. Link. However, if the Office of National Drug Control Policy's budget for fiscal year 2011 is to be believed, Kerlikowske was full of hot air. According to the 2011 funding highlights released by the ONDCP, with a PDF download for you, the Obama administration is growing the drug war and tilting its funds heavily toward law enforcement over treatment. The president's national drug control budget also continues the Bush administration's public relations tactic of obscuring the costs of prosecuting and imprisoning drug offenders. Enron-style accounting is how drug policy reform advocate Kevin Zeese described it in a huge article for Alternet in 2002. So as we always say, although we fall victim to it, I fall victim to it at times myself, don't listen to what they say, look at what they do. So we're covering the alternative media with a new documentary from Kevin Booth. Now we're going to quickly hit the latest episode from CorbettReport.com, episode 115, The Alternative Alternative Media. If the establishment media is puppeteering the alternative media, what does that leave us but ourselves? And why would we want to rely on anything else? From online radio, door-to-door newspapers, podcasting, vodcasting, we are becoming the media. Now, I had the good fortune, and I referenced it last week on the show, and had a conversation with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com and Richard Grove of PeaceRevolution.org, where we discussed, among myriad other things, the alternative alternative media. There's a clip from that available in episode 115 from Corbett Report. The full length is still being edited and will be available as soon as it's published up on MediaMonarchy.com. And again, that'll be coming by way of Richard Grove and the fine folks at TragedyAndHope.com and PeaceRevolution.org. The other updated bit from Corbett Report, if you're a listener of his show, you know he starts out and does the real news. He's now doing that basically as a video version. So another weekly video from CorbettReport.com, the Sunday update. And I suppose I'll reference right here, experienced technical difficulties. So the latest episode of The New World next week will be coming soon. That's the another weekly video series that CorbettReport.com does with yours truly. New World next week. Those videos are always available at the top right of all my pages. Cyberspacewar.com, foodworldorder.com, and MediaMonarchy.com. We're going to close it out with words from someone that I, unfortunately, have neglected and haven't followed up on posting up all his latest television shows and radio shows. It's tough to keep up, and that's honestly probably a good thing for the alternative media. So I've been slacking on posting up new shows and things from Clyde Lewis, who, as we've mentioned and congratulated recently, is blasting out tens of thousands of watts all over the Portland metro area and beyond. Clyde Lewis on KUFO FM here in Portland, Oregon. Those episodes are generally available streaming and from the store on ZeroPointRadio.com. Again, purchase and support the alternative media. Donate. And also from CascadiaPublicRadio.org. But that's not what I was going to mention. The other guy that I've unfortunately neglected lately and haven't posted up many of his recent shows on Portland Community Media or his radio shows from OracleBroadcasting.com. Alex Ansari. He was one of my early in-studio interviews here at the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, if I didn't mention that, recording live from the studios. We've got a clip from a recent meetup at a place called It's a Beautiful Pizza in downtown Portland, Oregon. And I thought this tied everything in together quite well. Alex Ansari talking about the power of independent media. And that ties in with the alternative media from CorbettReport.com. And those other shows, and maybe newspapers or pamphlets or zines, pirate radio stations, blogs that you guys know about. Get involved. Only by doing more research and homework and reading can you be able to make more informed decisions about your life. That's what it's all about. We're sharing information here. It's open source intelligence. Nonpartisan. That's what we do. So this has been the B-side of episode 155 from MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show. Of course, episode 156 coming right up. With all the Black Sunday, Super Bowl, Jockorama, Threataganda, and police state military drills. So much coming up on episode 156. So my friends, I thank you for joining me on this B-side episode. And we're going to go out listening to Alex Ansari of AlexAnsari.com talking about the power of independent media.
We as activists, we as the real people at the grassroots level, have to continue to hone our abilities to bring people together, communities together, right here on the local level, right here in the flesh. Meetings like this should be held all over the country. More people are going to be losing unemployment benefits throughout this year and next year. When that happens, there's going to be a lot of problems and a lot of angry people, and as most people know now, that's why they're making plans for martial law. The question is, where are people going to live? And back to access, where are people going to get alternative perspectives on what's really going on the planet when they change a facility like that and they let other outside special interest groups in? So again, if you want to bring up any national stories in a couple minutes, any other issues, we can talk about that. We can talk about the Baker bailouts and things of that nature. We can talk about Obama and the Council of Governors. We can talk about body scanners. We can talk about a lot of stuff. But it is a lot of repetitive information. And this should be a year of action where we scream literally from the local, middle, to national, international level for transparency, honesty, and accountability. And that is the mantra I'm going to get ex-staff and producers at PCN to scream from the top of their lungs. Because the reason I bring up the community meetings, a lot of people that watch that show on the internet, but it's more than just asking me, Alex, how can you catch your show if you're not going to be live? The question is, who can we call? What can we do to keep access, access? Because they're going to call access, access, but it's really not going to be access from independent producers. As I said before, other shows talking about things that you're really not interested in. And so while I got all this stuff, I got my plate full trying to guide people in the right direction, we've got people in control of PCM that have a whole different view of where the corporation should go from here on out. The fact is, I think they see us as useless eaters, useless producers, providing no revenue for a facility that's going broke. So before I put my own name on the line and go to the city of Portland and speak for my 3 minutes and ask them to think about access and the importance of access to the community and how much it's valued by the community, but I have to also make sure in my own backyard the streets are clean and there isn't any mismanagement of funds or racial discrimination. So, I mean, this is stuff I've been talking about on the show for years. When things get bad economically, people face more discrimination, whether it be based on their political beliefs or their color of skin, which to me is just total BS, total fallacy. I don't think there's such a thing as race. There are differences in us. Okay, we have different shades of color to our skin, the largest organ on our body, but it's not really who we are. We're not even our names. I'm not even really Alex Ansari. I'm not really like the racial background of who I am. That's not why I do what I'm doing. It's about who we are as people, as individuals, as souls living in human bodies. That's what reality is. Not dividing over race, not dividing over political beliefs, and not dividing over class. That's all BS, and that's where they want us.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
On my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
Yep.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.